This Is Your Life, episode, drum roll please, 100. I still can't believe I've done that many. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be reflecting on the first 100 episodes and talking about how I intend to change my podcast going forward. The bad news? I'm going to make some major changes. The good news is that I think you're really going to like them. Well, you can find the outline, the resource links, and a complete transcript in the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/100. I'll be back in a minute with some thoughts on this topic.
This is you competing against all other people in the same niche. I didn't hear it either. To get your message heard in an increasingly competitive and noisy world, you need a solid platform. You need a place to wow your audience. Build your home base, engage your tribe, and expand your reach. The solution? The Platform Conference, November 9th through the 11th, 2014. Brought to you by Michael Hyatt and Ken Davis. The Platform Conference is the place to take your platform to the next level. Our small and intimate environment will enable you to work closely with some of the most prolific speakers in the world and network with individuals who are invested in personal growth and success. Register today at platformconference.tv.
And be heard in a noisy world.
Well, today marks a major milestone. 100 podcast episodes. I can't believe it. Where is the time gone? I started back in February 2012, and I've posted a new podcast almost every week. But there have been some times, like during my sabbaticals when I've taken a hiatus, and then other times when I've just been irregular. But nonetheless, 100 episodes. The show has been downloaded, and I just checked this on Libsyn, which is the media service company that I use, 5.5 million times. 75% of my listeners are in the U.S. The rest, in order of market percentage, are Canada, the U.K., Australia, Germany, China, and South Africa. The show, as you may know, consistently ranks in the iTunes top 10 for business, and I've spent months talking about the changes I want to do with my team and a handful of friends I really trust. And you might be thinking, gosh, if it's been that successful, why do you want to change anything? You know, kind of like the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, I'm not sure I subscribe to that theory. I kind of believe if it ain't broke, break it. And so we may risk breaking it, but I really think this is going to improve it. The bottom line is that a lot will change, starting with episode 101. And I want to wait until then to give you the why. But let me just preview the changes in this episode. And then when we're done, I'm going to take a bunch of questions because I promised an autographed copy of Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, my book, to everyone whose question I answered on this show. So here are three ways the podcast is going to change, starting with episode 101. And three ways it will remain the same. So first, how it's going to change. First of all, drum roll please, I will have a brand new co-host, Michelle Cachat. Michelle is a good friend of mine. We've known each other for about 7 years. She's married to Troy. She's a mom, a stepmom, and a foster mom to six. It's pretty complicated, and I'll let her explain that because I want to do a little interview with her so that you have a chance to get to know her and appreciate her like I do. But she's an amazing speaker. She's an awesome writer. She MCs all of our conferences, the Conferences for Dynamic Communicators International, which Ken Davis and I co-own. She's also a speaker there. She's a speech coach. She's coaching me right now in a speech that I'm preparing. But she's an awesome writer. She's written a great memoir that's called Undone, which will come out next year. She blogs at michellecachotte.com. She's also has one of the best get noticed theme for WordPress sites out there. I love the design of her site. But she's also a recovering perfectionist, which is why we get along so well. And she's just genuinely authentic. I love everything about her, and I think you're going to fall in love with her too. But I can't wait to introduce you to her. But that's the first way that the podcast is going to change, is that I'm going to have a co-host. It's not just going to be this solo monologue, which brings me to the second way that things are going to change. And that is, I'm switching the format from a monologue to a conversation. Now, this is going to make it more interesting for me and, frankly, less work. And I'll go into this in more detail, but I want to kind of explain what I've been going through for the last couple of years as I've done this podcast, because it's not been easy. It's taken a lot of work. It continues to take a lot of work. But I also think it's not as interesting as it will be as a conversation. And it's also going to, I think, make it more interesting for you, because you won't just have to listen to me, but you'll have the added advantage of listening to Michelle as she asks questions and so forth. And then third, and this is not cheap, but I'm adding a video podcast. So I've got a video crew showing up with four cameras. I'm not sure how well a video podcast will do, but it's something I've wanted to experiment with. And since Michelle and I are going to be together in the studio, I thought I'd capture it on video as well. And I hope it results in additional exposure for my content. That would be really cool if it did. So that's how it's going to change. And those are the three major changes. Probably some other nuances. Frankly, probably some of it we'll figure out as we move through the process. But those are the things that I know are going to change. Now, here's how it's going to stay the same. Number one, we're going to cover the same kinds of topics. My goal is still to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. So the destination is identical. It's just that the route to get there is what's going to change. I think we're going to take a little bit more scenic route and get a little bit off the beaten path, at least compared to where we've been over the last couple of years. Number two, I will still be the primary one delivering the content. Now, Michelle's role as the co-host is going to be to excavate the content and go deeper than I would on my own. So she's not going to give me a pass when I say something without an example. You know, she's going to dig a little deeper, and I think it'll be surprising to both of us in terms of what we uncover and the insights that we get. She'll also occasionally play devil's advocate. I like that, frankly. I think some of the best content, some of the most interesting content comes out of debate and a difference of opinion, and I've never minded that at all, and hopefully this new format will allow for that. And she'll also add her own unique point of view. I think it's going to be really cool that we've got someone who's a woman and giving the woman's perspective on this, because I firmly believe that leadership is not just a male thing. And I'm glad that I have an extraordinary female leader who will be joining me on the podcast. And then the third way that it's going to stay the same is we're going to keep it to about 30 minutes. Now, I know that sometimes, you know, I've gone to 40 minutes. I think I even had one episode that lasted an hour. But I really think 30 minutes is the sweet spot. And I've had a lot of people tell me that, not only my reader survey, but just, you know, people writing in that 30 minutes is about right. More than that, and it's difficult. Less than that, and they don't really feel like they've got enough content to listen to during a run or their commute or whatever. So we're going to try to keep it to about 30 minutes. But with Michelle on board in episode 101, we'll talk about why I decided to make this change. And here's the important thing, and what you can learn from it for what you're doing. Because I think that change is something that all of us encounter in our roles as leaders. And sometimes change is foisted onto us. It's not of our own choosing. And sometimes we choose to change because we've got a vision of where things could go. But what I ask in the meantime is that you remain open and join me in this journey. It won't be perfect, I can promise you that. But I'm pretty sure it'll be better. And all I ask is that you give us a chance and then let us know what you think. I mean, I really do want to hear from you, but I just want you to give it a chance. So, question for you. What do you think of the changes that I'm proposing? Anything else I should consider or anything else I should make sure I absolutely, positively don't change? You can leave your answers at michaelhyatt.com/100. Now let's turn to our listener Q&A segment. Again, I'm going to give away a free autographed copy of my book, Platform, to each of the following nine people who all had terrific questions. The first question comes from Charlie.
Hi, Michael. This is Charlie Page. My blog is at charliepage.com. I love your podcast, and I'm loving the Get Noticed theme as well. It's an incredibly powerful theme. My question is this. If you had it to do all over again, is there one area in which you'd have focused more than you did? For example, would you have blogged more often, started your podcast sooner, things like that? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Hey, Charlie, thanks for that question. I'm not sure if you mean from the beginning of my career or just since I began this entrepreneurial journey back when I left Thomas Nelson in 2012. I'm going to assume it's that. So I'm going to address that. It's actually, by the way, 2011. I think if I had to focus on one area more than I did, it would be in building my email list. You know, I just can't overemphasize that. I don't know what I was thinking, but for about 7 years of my blogging career, my platform building career, even when I was the CEO at Thomas Nelson, I just wasn't focused on that. And it really set me back, or at least it kept me from starting as strongly as I wanted when I left to go pro full time. Because without an email list, you don't have direct access to the people that you want to reach. And I was dependent on RSS feeds and social media and all the rest. But now that I've built my email list up to over 100,000 subscribers, it makes it way easy to monetize the site. Well, I shouldn't say it's easy, but it's easier to monetize the site. It's easier to reach people directly. And I feel like I own a digital asset that really is the core asset of my whole business. So that's what I would do over if I had to do it over again. The next question comes from Christina.
My name is Christina Parker Brown, and I blog at my website, aka homeschoolmom.com. And I am curious to know, what is your top or top three things that you do to establish trust with your audience? I love your website. Thank you.
Ooh, this is a good question, Christina. I would suggest three things to build trust with your audience. And by the way, this is true if you're a salesperson trying to build trust with a prospect. It's true if you're a blogger trying to build trust with an audience. It applies in nearly every context. Probably it applies, you know, even in dating. I don't know. But I would suggest three things. Number one, show up. You know, just showing up on a consistent, regular basis builds trust. And if you're a blogger or a podcaster, when you say you're going to blog three times a week, then you got to show up three times a week, no matter what. And by the way, I don't care if you show up once a week or three times a week, just be consistent. Do what you say you're going to do. That's one of the key things that builds trust. So just show up. Number two, be vulnerable. This is crucial too, and I'm going to talk more about this with respect to my tip of the week, but I would just say, you know, you got to be willing to take a risk and reveal something of your heart to people that you're talking with. It can't always be just your victories and your successes, but you got to be vulnerable in terms of where you screwed up, where you made a mistake. You know, that builds trust, because we inherently don't trust people that appear to have perfect lives. And so, you know, and the good news is none of us have a perfect life, so we don't have to fake this. What we do have to do is have the courage to be vulnerable and to reveal where we've tripped up, where we failed. Those are the kinds of things, counterintuitively, that build trust. Just like with your kids. You know, I think in my parents' generation, they thought they could, you know, never share a mistake or admit that they had failed. And, you know, they thought that somehow if they did, that would ruin their authority or undermine their authority with their kids, when in fact, it was just the opposite. When we're vulnerable with our kids, when we say that we screwed up, I mean, first of all, they already know. Kids are smart. They've got it figured out. Same thing with your employees. Same thing with your blog readers. So you might as well admit it. So vulnerability is the second thing. The third thing I would say is be generous. If you want to build trust, you got to give more than you ask. You've got to add more value than you attempt to extract. So I would suggest those three things will help you. But great, great question, Christina. I probably ought to write a blog post on that. The next question comes from DJ.
Hi, Michael. This is DJ Smith from Nashville, Tennessee. I don't have a personal blog, but I do manage all of the marketing for a local company, and we're wanting to add a blog as part of our arsenal. So here's my question. Are there differences in strategy when developing a platform for an individual, such as yourself, versus an organization? Thanks for the podcast and all the great information you provide. I look forward to hearing from you soon. Thanks, bye.
DJ, I've never really thought about this, but yeah, there probably are differences in strategies if you're building an individual blog versus a company blog. For one thing, when you're building a company blog, you can have more than one voice. It just doesn't have to be the single voice of a person. Now, I would say this. I wouldn't make it sort of a generic company blog, like there's a nameless, faceless person that's writing these blog posts, because people do want to connect with people. Even if they're multiple people, they want to connect with those personalities. That's why when you see all the big blogs that are out there, whether it's Huffington Post or Mashable, some of the biggest blogs in the world that have multiple authors, they're always specific authors. You know, it's not just the generic Mashable voice or the generic Huffington Post voice, but there are reporters or there are bloggers that are writing there. So that's one of the things I would make difference. Frankly, I think that in some ways a company blog could be easier because you've got others to shoulder the load. I would think of it in terms of a magazine, and where they're the same though is you've got to add value to the readers. That's the key thing. If you do that, you'll get a lot of you get a bigger audience. If you don't do that, I don't care what you're doing, you're not going to build an audience. And the next question comes from Jim.
Hi, Michael. My name is Jim Turner, and I'm planning on launching my blog soon. Here's my question. In considering content to write about, I've identified four different groups of people that I would like to speak to. There's some overlap between these groups, but I'm struggling between what I see are two options. Number one, writing one blog which addresses every audience with different posts focusing on different audiences each post. Or two, just creating two or three separate blogs to address each audience separately. What would you suggest? Is there anything that I'm overlooking? Thanks for your help in advance.
Jim, I would strongly suggest that you not write more than one blog. What you're going to find is that you may have initial enthusiasm for more than one blog, but what happens in the messy middle? I don't know. I can't even think of one person who can maintain more than one blog and be consistent at both. I think it's better to discipline yourself to pick one. Or if you can't do that, you know, the second best thing, and frankly, this is what I do, is at least have different categories, but do it under one blog. You know, I don't just write about productivity, and I don't just write about leadership, or I don't just write about platform building. You know, I write about all those. Now, in my own mind, those kind of all fit together under an overarching business model, and I won't take the time to go through that, but they're all a part of or a manifestation of leadership. But regardless, I would really urge you to discipline yourself to focus on one. And then maybe if you get consistent and you're months or years into it and you've got this other itch that you want to scratch and you want to start another blog, great. You know, more power to you. But I wholeheartedly don't recommend it. It's beginning. And I've quoted this ancient Chinese proverb time and time again, which still rings true to me today, which is man who chases two rabbits catches neither. The next question comes from my good friend, John.
Hello, Michael. This is John Richardson from PersonalSuccessToday.com. One simple question. Which do you enjoy more, writing a blog post or doing a podcast? Love to hear your answer. Thank you.
Well, John, I probably shouldn't say this on a podcast, but I enjoy blogging way more. You know, I think, you know, as an introvert, you know, it's a way for me to kind of get alone and think through my thoughts and be able to work in the anvil of my mind, so to speak, and really perfect it before I push it out to the world. Podcasting for me is difficult. You know, it's just work. I don't exactly dread it, but I know it's a piece of work. I have to kind of gird up my loins, so to speak. And when I go into the studio, it's just a lot of work. So if I had to pick one, I would pick blogging, but I do think that's going to change with Michelle. And the reason for that is I love doing interviews. I do a lot of podcast interviews, radio interviews, TV interviews. I love the interactivity of that. I love good conversations. So I'm hoping that that's going to change my attitude toward podcasting and that it's going to be a more enjoyable thing for me. The next question comes from Julia.
Hi, Michael. My name is Julia Kasdorf. My website, juliakasdorfmusic.com. I love your podcasts, but here's the problem. I'm a guitar player, and I've never considered myself to be a leader. And I can't say that I have a message to share, except that I'm really good at what I do. So, Michael, how do you define a person as a leader? Thank you.
I don't think we've had that question on this show before, but it's a great one, Julia. Thanks for asking it. You know, I really agree with much of John Maxwell's definition about leadership. And he says that leadership is influence. Now, I think it's more than that, but certainly that's the biggest part of it. And if you assume that that's true, then everybody is potentially a leader because everyone has influence. The only question is, are you going to be intentional with that leadership and use it to make people's lives better, to lead them somewhere? Or are you going to be unaware of it and kind of go through life thinking that you're not a leader? So I would submit that you, Julia, are a leader, probably in ways that you don't fully understand, but they're probably people, maybe just people in your family, maybe your friends, maybe the people around you, maybe the people that, you know, in your band, if you're in a band, or the people that you do sessions with. You know, you can be an influence to them. And it really comes down to, I think, declaring yourself a leader and then beginning to exhibit the attitude of a leader, which always begins with self-leadership. You know, how can we lead ourselves in a way that we would like those who follow us to live? That's always the challenge to me, and that's what I try to do. Great question. Okay, another question from Matthew.
Hi, Michael. My name is Matthew Green, and I'm calling from Sydney, Australia. I just wanted to congratulate you on your 100th episode. Your work is fantastic, and I'm a huge fan. I run a new teacher support website called imanewteacher.com, and I was wondering what your biggest struggle has been working for yourself. In the early days, did you ever think you'd made the wrong move? Thank you so much for taking the time to answer my question, and I'm looking forward to hearing your response.
Well, there are a lot of challenges, Matthew, to working for yourself. I think for me as an entrepreneur, the biggest challenge, bar none, is the discipline of saying no. You know, I have a lot of ideas, and I can wear out my team and wear out myself if I try to pursue all those. And it's really tough. You know, my team has to push back. There are times when I have ideas and they say, okay, well, that sounds great. Let's just kind of put it on the back burner and we'll talk about it in a few months. So they try to keep me disciplined and keep me focused. But this happens to a lot of entrepreneurs. The lack of focus, I believe, destroys more businesses, more ministries, more organizations than any other single thing. You know, just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do something. Just because you have a great idea doesn't mean that you should pursue it now. You know, what we all need is a few essential things. And I've been reading this book, I just finished it, in fact, by Greg McKeown, called Essentialism. And if you haven't read it, I heartily recommend it. It's a fabulous book, but it's about this very thing, about paring life down to the essentials. It's not exactly minimalism, which is a little bit different philosophy, but it's essentialism. What are the essential things? What are the things that are necessary right now for me to succeed? And that's not everything. And the truth is, most of what we're pursuing is trivial. It doesn't matter. But what are the essential things that do matter? And to get, become increasingly focused on those are important. So that's not something I've mastered. I mean, I kind of, you know, rattled that off like I've got it nailed, but I don't. I promise you. This is something I have to work at every single week. And every time I just think that, you know, I've become successful at this or I've got it nailed, you know, then I have a setback and I overcommit or say yes to something else I shouldn't have said yes to. So it's a continual pursuit. The next question comes from Nicole.
Hi, Michael. My name is Nicole and my blog is at knittingforcharity.org. I actually haven't always owned this blog. For the past 3 years, I have contributed to it as a freelance writer. The owner decided to sell it and she sold it to me. I'm thrilled to be the owner now, and I really want to use this wonderful blog not only to help people, but also to help support my family. I'm just wondering what kind of advice you might have for someone who is taking over an already active, thriving website like the one I now own. Mostly I'm concerned with things such as voice, how much I should let myself into it now that I'm the owner rather than just a contributor, and with perhaps offering a product for sale like an ebook. Thank you so much.
Nicole, let me just broaden this a little bit, and I would say that my answer is going to apply not to just acquiring a thriving website, but also acquiring a company or a business. And I've been involved in both situations. I've been involved in the corporate world and acquiring a number of businesses, and I've been on the side of having been acquired. Let me just say first and foremost, before you make any changes, stop to appreciate what you've got. Try to figure out what that company or that website is doing right. What's the magic that's made it work to that point? And so before you go in and just, you know, upset the apple cart and start making wholesale changes, first, respect the history, respect the people, and understand the good stuff that's there. Because if you can build on that foundation, change is a lot easier for the people that are involved. And I've been a part of companies where the people who acquired us just came in and started making wholesale changes without really understanding that. And it didn't set very well, and they didn't get the cooperation, and they wondered why it didn't work when they had a clash of cultures. But they didn't take long enough to appreciate it. So that's where I would start. Then I would begin interviewing the people that are involved and getting their feedback. Usually the people that are there know the changes that need to be made. They may not make all of them. They may not see all of them clearly. They may not have the courage or oftentimes a sense that they have the permission to make the changes that they know that need to be made. But I would ask the people there. Again, it gives them a sense of ownership, a sense of alignment with what ultimately you want to do. And then I would begin to implement the changes. Now, this is maybe sounds a little bit contrary to what I said. I would go through that process. Then I would make the changes pretty quickly. You know, I wouldn't pull the Band-Aid off slowly. When a new leader comes in, when a new owner comes in, people expect change, and it needs to be done respectfully, but it needs to be done quickly. You can dilly-dally around too long, and what happens then is people get this false sense of security that nothing's going to change, or worse, cynicism sets in. They say, well, yeah, new owner, same problems, and so you don't want that either. So those are just a few things, though, kind of the way I think about it. The last question comes from T.C. Long.
Hi, Michael. My name is T.C. Long from Elma, Arkansas. My website is tclong.net, where I am just getting started blogging about mental health issues. I am also a backyard beekeeper and have had people show interest in me starting a blog about my beekeeping experiences. I was planning on doing two separate blogs and platforms, but I heard you discourage that, especially when starting out. Do you have any thoughts on this situation, either focusing on one blog or perhaps combining the two? Thanks.
Well, TC, my answer to this question is pretty much the same as I gave to Jim, but there was such a contrast here between mental health and beekeeping that I just had to say something. I, you know, I was trying to like draw the Venn diagram out and find out where those two things overlap, and maybe there's something you could do there, but no. Again, I would just say pick one or pick the other, but focus on that. I get this question all the time, and hopefully it's clear to everyone how I believe about this, but pick one. And this is a discipline. And by the way, one of the things that happens with gifted people is they've got so many talents that sometimes they pursue all of them and are never successful in any one of them. You know, jack of all trades, master of none. We've all heard that. And I fight this myself. I'm to be honest, kind of good at several different things. And if I'm not careful, I'll pursue a lot of things to my undoing. So I think maturity requires the discipline to focus narrowly on a few strengths, and then you can add to those as you develop some proficiency and some momentum, but not before. So that's all the time we have for questions this week. I'll be back after the break with an announcement and my tip of the week.
Thinking of starting your own blog, but worried that your technical know-how is not up to scratch?
The good news is that starting blogging has never been easier.
Michael shares his knowledge with you for free and will show you that 20 minutes is all it takes to have your own blog up and running.
This is John D. Harrison from johndharrison.com. I started out with a free WordPress site, and if I would have applied your advice, started out with a self-hosted site, I really could have saved myself a lot of headaches. Self-hosted definitely is the way to go, and your screencast is the easiest way I know to make that happen.
Join Michael and follow his quick and easy step-by-step video tutorial at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Take action now and start blogging today.
michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Okay, no real announcement this week, but I do have the tip of the week. Gail and I just finished listening to Brené Brown's six-hour workshop called The Power of Vulnerability. We got it on Amazon, and I've got a link in the show notes, but it's a fantastic workshop. I wasn't quite sure when I bought it if it was a book or if it was a workshop or what it was, but I'm so glad I bought it. I first learned of Brené, don't know if you're familiar with her, but I first learned about her when I watched her TED Talk by the same name, one of the most viewed TED Talks out there. But she's a shame researcher at the University of Houston. She's been on Oprah. She's the author of the number one New York Times bestsellers, Daring Greatly, and also The Gifts of Imperfection, both of those number one New York Times bestsellers. But she talks about a number of subjects related to vulnerability in the workshop. But I especially liked her distinction between guilt and shame. I'd not made this distinction, but it was hugely helpful to me. She basically says that guilt can be positive. It calls us to repair what's broken. On the other hand, shame is almost never productive. It keeps us and others stuck. In fact, based on her research, and again, she's a shame researcher, is that it never has the intended result. People don't change their behavior when they're shamed. They persist in it, and they act out in even worse ways. But in this series, I learned how to recognize shame in my own life and make sure I don't use it with others. Now, why is that relevant to you as a leader? Because you can't use shame as a motivator. And it's amazing to me how many leaders attempt that, and they wonder why people don't change, why people get cynical, why the behavior that they'd like to eradicate gets worse. So I would highly recommend this series, especially if you're a writer, a speaker, or a leader of any kind. Vulnerability can help you. It can help build trust. It can help you connect you with people in ways that you can only imagine. So that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. 100 episodes in the can. I'm so excited. I'm feeling honestly a little bit proud of that. But now my attention is turning to the next 100 episodes. And I'm really excited about Michelle's involvement. And I hope you'll give her a warm welcome in the next episode. And we'll try it and we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited for what it's going to do. But if you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link out to the show. That really does help me with visibility on iTunes, especially. So help me get the word out. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life.